Blog Talk Radio.
Ooh. Yeah. You already know what time it is. It's that official time. When we take this worldwide. Let's go. Listen. So now it's time to turn it up. Surf the radio waves as we begin to burn it up. We all up in your area like landscape, definitely bringing you the power slamming pancakes. It's the mandate that you tune in. It's time to move out so we can move in and recognize that this is no illusion. I'm here to clear the air so that there is no confusion. It all started off in the book of Genesis when Jacob was wrestling with who he thought was his nemesis. And when the man saw he couldn't overpower him, he touched his hip but he really could have devoured him. And from that point then we hear a name change, rearrange the game, so now we gotta change. So I'm here to let you know it's time to listen to the Pancake and Power Slam Show. Let's go!
Listening to the Pancakes and Power Slam Show by Crave Wrestling on Blog Talk Radio. Be sure to follow Crave Wrestling on Twitter at Crave Wrestling and join the Facebook fan page Crave Wrestling.
Episode 228, ladies and gentlemen. This is the Pancakes and Power Slam Show. I am Chris Featherstone. As always, here, follow us at Crave Wrestling. Facebook, Crave Wrestling. Ladies and gentlemen, without further ado, I am pleased and privileged to bring to you tonight the former TNA X Division and Tag Team Champion, none other than Robbie E. How are you tonight, sir?
Hey, I'm good, but I got two bones to pick with you. The first one is I'm a former two-time tag champ.
Oh, okay.
Not just tag champ.
There you go.
And then beyond that, did I hear you correctly that this is the 228th episode of this podcast?
That's
the first time that you've asked me to be on? You've waited 228 episodes for me to be on this? Really? I'm your 228th pick?
Yes, and there's something very special about 228, and that it's not 227 or 229.
Well, when you put it that way, all right.
There you go. Awesome. Appreciate you, man. So speaking of your character, man, it really spawned off of a very popular television show at the time. What was the thought process that stemmed behind your character as you debuted in TNA years ago?
Well, you know what it really was? I mean, I was at TNA for a tryout, and Pat Kenny, who used to be Simon Diamond, who was an agent for TNA, he's a good friend of mine from when I first started wrestling. We lived close to each other, and we were hanging out eating together, and Vince Russo walked by, and Pat yells to him and goes, "Hey, Vince, you wanted to do a Jersey Shore character," and pointed to me and goes, "This guy's from Jersey." And he looked at me, and he goes, "Could you get a girl?" And I was like, "Yeah," even though at the time I couldn't. They ended up getting Cookie, mm-hmm. But I was just like, "Yeah," you know, and then they whispered something to each other, and then they – that day, literally, we're like, okay, we're going to put you in a match, spike your hair up, and just, you know, become a Jersey Shore guy. Like, I hadn't done, obviously, I'm from Jersey, and it was similar to who I was anyway, mm-hmm. but I had never done any character like that previous, that day. I only had a few hours to prepare for it, so it's pretty crazy.
Wow, yeah, that is absolutely. So did you even know Cookie in the Indies at all before your TNA partnership?
Very little, like some shows together like a few years prior to that, but I hadn't seen her in years, and I was there for my match. They liked me. It worked out great. I wrestled a guy named Bobby Fish. We had a great match, and then they were looking at him, and then right when I came to the curtain, they had me do a promo, like right away in my face, like, hey, you know, and I nailed it, and then they offered me a job right then and there, and then a month or two later, they brought me back for another dark match,
mm-hmm.
and and when they brought her in that day. So that was the first time I'd seen her in years. I guess they just wanted to try us out together, and that worked too. But no, I didn't know her well.
Wow, that's very, very interesting. And y'all two worked out very well together. She was very, very much on the heel side, and she definitely was one of those people who was a very, very good person to work with. It was very, very awesome. So basically, what happened with just her leaving? Was it a matter of you just kind of breaking off yourself?
Well, you say she was great to watch, and maybe that was great for you, but behind the scenes,
not
for
so
everyone
much.
Else, she was not so much. Without going into too descriptive detail, she just, wrestling's fun and wrestling games, but at the end of the day, it's still a job, and you got to be able to differentiate, is that the right word, between the two, and she wasn't mature enough for the job and didn't know how to handle herself and take it seriously. And, she kind of just did it to herself. She did it to herself.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, you both of you play very, very good heels on camera. But, it's just one of those things that I guess I'd call myself an insider now. And it's when I see someone written off or not there anymore after being there for a short time, it kind of, I kind of get the alert that, you probably weren't very handy backstage, as much as you kind of are on screen. So that's what I kind of picked up as well. So I definitely can see where you're coming from there. So what type of indie work did you do? Go ahead.
Oh, no, I was just going to say I kind of consider her to be like the devil. That's all.
Yikes. Was it just like not getting along with people backstage? Was it not going? Was it not listening to any advice given to her, or what? What was the issue?
Well, everything you just said for sure, and mm-hmm. I just thinking she was the star of the show, and that she was untouchable, and she was this big star, and it just wasn't the case.
Usually people who think like that, they'll back it up and ends up working very, very indie shows that people really don't know about, or somewhere at some 9-to-5 that they can't stand. So it's unfortunate that she thought about that. So what type of indie work did you have leading up to TNA?
I started when I was 16, pro wrestling. My first match was on my 17th birthday. And then I started with TNA when I was 26. Mm-hmm. So I was wrestling for almost 10 years all around the North before I signed with TNA.
Wow.
So I have a lot of prior experience.
Wow. That's very incredible. It very much is.
Now I'm 32. Mm-hmm. And I started when I was 16, so when you say that loud, I've been wrestling half my life.
Half your life, yeah. That's the first thing I thought about. Yeah, half your life. Very interesting. So those 10 years working in the indies, 10 years before you came to TNA, what exactly did you, what was your favorite match as far as someone, an indie, a star person who's very notable? Like you said, you wrestled a dark match against Bobby Fish while you were in TNA. Now, of course, many, many who watch wrestling know that he's the ROH TV champion now, and he's really has some success now. What other names do you recall going against in the indies that are, reputable names now?
We could talk forever. Probably it goes on and on and on of guys who became stars or guys who were stars. But, to be honest, as far as one match that, sticks out, it's even now when people ask me my favorite match, or it's just so hard because there's so many, and I like so many different things for so many different reasons.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just hard to pick out one that, sticks out, more memorable than the other because there's so many that are important to me.
Yeah.
So at the time back, I'd have to really go into deep thought about that question because there's so many matches that probably right now I'm not even remembering that I'd have to think about because not one comes to mind.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So you had a moment in WWE 10 years back. How did that come about, and how was that experience?
Which one do you mean? Because I did a lot of extra work for WWE, so I've been a bunch of matches and backstage segments. And
Yeah. I remember a couple of backstage segments. And what dark matches do you remember from WWE?
Well, I did matches on SmackDown versus Matt Morgan versus Mark Henry, ECW versus Kofi Kingston. I was the guy that got beat up by Edge when he was dressed up like Ric Flair, which is one of Raw's greatest moments. there was a bunch of dark matches I've done against the Dicks and the Heartthrobs. And
yeah.
So it's, I did work for them for years.
Mm-hmm. So why was it that they never, capitalize on your extra work?
Well, you know what it is? I think a lot of what's not just WWE, but wrestling in general, proving, even in TNA, how I got my job, that it's a lot of right place, right time. And I just don't think it was the right place, right time,
Yeah.
They're always changing that, now they're into smaller guys. When they were looking at me, their thing was big guys. And I don't think it's that they didn't like me or appreciate me. I just don't think it was the right place, right time.
Yeah, I agree with that. I've interviewed many, many people on my show, and a lot of people, I mean, it's usually the common thread of people saying that just not, right place and right time. And, as we were talking about with TNA, you've really honed, a gimmick, a character that's lasted, for so long. How was it, wrestling with TNA in the beginning of your tenure? Was it something that you were nervous about, or something that you felt confident because you've been wrestling in the indies for so long?
Well, I knew a lot of the guys, so that made me more, comfortable. And I had been wrestling on the indies long, and I knew I was ready for a break somewhere. So that definitely gave me confidence. But still, it's your first time working hard cameras, your first time on live television. My debut was on live television on a special Thursday night episode of Impact on Spike. So, it was still nerve-wracking, and I had a lot to learn, and I knew that. So I was humbled to be there and just, willing to learn.
Yeah.
Nervous, excited, all normal feelings for anybody.
Oh, of course. Yeah, absolutely. Speaking of break, it didn't take you long after your debut to have a feud with Jay Lethal, and he's one of the greatest. He calls himself the greatest first-generation wrestler, and you defeated that great first-generation wrestler for the X Division Championship. How was that? Your character was getting pretty over as a heel. You were getting a lot of heat, so they decided to put the belt on you. How did that come about?
I think just go big or go home. I went right to Lethal to feud with him, and it worked out great. We had wrestled each other many, many times, and had feuds all over New Jersey and New York and Pennsylvania because he was from my area. So I think it was just the writing was on the wall, was there for it to be Jersey versus Jersey. I mean, it was set in stone already. So feud worked out perfect, and we worked together so well.
Yeah.
But yeah, I won my exhibition title, second match in TNA?
Yeah.
Third match, please. Yeah.
Yeah, very, very interesting. That's, talk about, them investing in your character. That was, like you said, go big or go home for sure. So, you had a pretty, successful cruiserweight division, and your character was getting over. They decided to team you up with Jesse Goddard down the line. Was it just a matter of just creative not really having too much for you both? And then Jesse was a good fit. How did that team come about?
Well, first it was actually after Cookie, I was with Rob Terry. And we kind of turned into Big Rob and Bigger Rob. We both were matching sweaters. Then we had the lift and the rope and all that stuff, which I think that was kind of two guys are kind of just lingering. Let's put them together. They have the same name, and we actually made it into something pretty cool.
Yeah,
as for me and Jesse, I think it was just they kind of saw that me and Jesse were similar, and we like hung out backstage. We were kind of like the same person, so I think they kind of just said these guys belong together.
Mm-hmm.
It's written itself. So they tried us out together, and again, same thing. We work so well together, it just stuck.
Yeah.
Romans are like inseparable.
the Big Rob, Bigger Rob, that tandem was actually pretty funny. I thought it was really interesting to see Rob Terry in that type of role. It was, but it worked though. I thought it was, I thought you guys got over pretty well. But bromance, I mean, like you said, yeah, go ahead.
Oh, sorry, I was just going to say, on the Rob Terry, if I could go back and have video footage of the day I went up to him with a pink sweater and handed it to him, and I told him he's going to wear this and he's going to match my sweater, if you could see the look in his face, it was priceless.
Man, yeah, those things, those candid gestures, man, are really priceless. That would have been really interesting to film. So the bromans end up being, you know, tag team champions, end up getting very, very much over. But for some reason, TNA decided to split them up. Was it just a matter of, and you guys are back together, but you guys split up. What was the cause of the split up? Was it just trying to test the waters on both of your gimmicks? Because I remember you guys were doing the babyface thing for a while, and then Jesse became more of an Adonis figure, and he was trying to be this mean, aggressive heel while you were, you know, kind of really trying to get your traction as a singles baby face? Were they just trying to test the waters and try something different?
Yeah, I mean, I think in 2016, you want to keep things moving and changing and trying new things out to see what works the best. And knowing that you could always go back to the bromance, I think it was just we were just trying to do our thing as singles wrestlers. I think it both broke us out a little bit more and strengthened us as singles competitors. Mm-hmm. And that's why now I think back as the bromans, we're better than ever.
Yeah.
But I think it was good for everyone involved, you know?
Yeah. So was it just a matter, as far as your getting back together, was this a matter of saying, hey, we tried it out, you know, it's better to say that we did it and know that it wasn't necessarily successful than to keep thinking what happens, you know, if they split up? Was it just a matter of them saying, okay, well, we did it now, they fit better together, and let's reform them?
Yeah, me and Jesse, I think the single thing worked for us, but I think later on, maybe in a few years to come, we will be more prepared. I think it was a little test, and I think we'll be a little more prepared in years to come when we're a little older,
mm-hmm.
and even a little more experienced than we already are. And so I think we said, let's go back, let's try being bromance as fan favorites, become 3-time tag champs, and see what happens.
Yeah. Well, speaking of fan favorites, you have a commodity which would definitely and has definitely helped your fanfare, which is Raquel. So, you know, no for Cookie, but is Raquel, have you guys found out that you work well with her, and how's the relationship going?
Raquel's cool. She's very new to pro wrestling, and she knows that, and she's willing to learn and wants to learn. And when she's at home, she's training during the week to get better and better and better. And she's got some background in fighting and MMA and stuff. So she brings stuff to the table, but yet she also knows that she's inexperienced and she wants to get better and wants to learn. So her as our guru is a good thing. And she's, you know, she's a looker. So she's helping, you know, distract some of our opponents. So it's working out good.
Yeah, absolutely. So it was an interesting pairing, because I remember she came in and was trying to kind of lure Bobby Lashley initially, and then that kind of dropped away, and then she became your like you said, your guru, and it's been working. It's a very interesting pairing, but it kind of balances out the dynamics. She's more of a, you know, like you said, of a guru type of person, while, you know, you and Jesse are the partiers. Speaking of the partiers, you had you were also affiliated with someone who was DJ Z. Now, it seemed like he fit perfectly with you starting off as the DJ, introducing you all. You were all still playing the heel role. But, you know, it seemed like it was a pretty good pairing. But it seemed like it was short-lived. Why was that the case?
Same, you know, when the bromance broke up, you know, DJ Z just broke up along the way. And, you know, we're still boys with him. DJ Z is one of my best friends in and outside of the ring. And, you know, we always root each other on. I just think now he's kind of doing his own thing in the X Division and showing it, doing all his lucha wrestling. And, you know, again, we're still boys, and there's still a place for him with the bromans if we ever need him there.
Nice. Yeah, and he won a number one contender X Division title match not too long ago, so he might bring some gold over to the bromans. And you, like you said, you're looking to become three-time tag team champion, so three people with some gold, maybe that'll be a very good formation. Speaking of just kind of a reset button, Impact Wrestling just recently moved to Thursdays. Can you tell the transition? Because sometimes, Impact is known to be bouncing with different days. Do you feel home on Thursdays? I know you guys have tapings and everything, but how do you think Thursdays compare to just as far as a wrestling week? Because it may be a good thing because you have Raw on Monday and Tuesdays. From a television standpoint, you have a break. Of course, you have NXT and the Cruiserweight Classic now, but that's on the network. But from a television standpoint, there is a day break, so it's not just an overload of wrestling. So it seems like Thursdays may work well for you all.
Yeah, I mean, it's a good night for TV. When you think of Thursday, you think of wrestling. At least I do. I feel like when I was growing up, there was always wrestling on Thursday.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a good night, and it's a good new time. We were on 9 to 11. Now we're on 8 to 10. So little kids that have to go to bed early and stuff, now they can watch it because it starts a little earlier. And if you're a wrestling fan, like you said, there's wrestling pretty much on every night. So it's an exciting time. You get to watch everything.
Yeah, absolutely.
I wish there was wrestling on every night. When I was growing up, there was wrestling on every night.
Yeah, I'd be glued every single day. How would you label your overall takeaway from the Amazing Race experience that you had?
Obviously I wish I did it with a different partner, but it's once in a lifetime. It's not even once in a lifetime. Most people will never get to do anything like that. It was just wild.
Yeah.
You live out of a backpack, you're traveling all these places. It's surreal. It just goes so quick. I'm proud that I made it all the way to the finals. And when I say I made it all the way to the finals. And, I did well on the show. And, it's no way to describe, man. It really was wild.
Yeah. So are your old relationship still amicable at all? Because I know that she's expecting, if I'm not mistaken. Are you dating anyone in the wrestling field now?
I am actually married, and my wife has twins on the way.
Oh yeah, that's right. I think I saw that on Twitter not too long ago. Yeah, congratulations. That's right.
Yeah,
that's awesome, man.
Well, actually, yeah, we're in October. The twins will be born. Two boys, too many bromans, so that's pretty crazy. But I got married. We got married last August, and it's gonna change my world. I'm a kid, but I'm super excited.
Yeah, that's awesome. Yeah, I have two boys, almost four and one and a half. But to have them at the same time is a different animal for sure. So congratulations for that. Yeah, absolutely. So what are your biggest expectations? Like I said, you moved on Thursdays and you talked about three-time tag team champions. What are just some end-of-year goals for the bromans?
Well, definitely to be three-time tag champions. And then just, eventually to keep doing our thing, to keep getting the crowd behind us and let them seeing this different side of us, showing that we actually could wrestle.
Mm-hmm.
And then also, like I said, in years to come, we both do want to become single competitors again at some point. And, I'm a former tag champ, X Division champ, a television champ. I would love to be a world champ and, say I've held every title and be on the short list of Grand Slam champions. Hopefully that'll happen.
Very much so. Robbie, where can we find you?
Instagram and Twitter at Robbie E Impact, and then my website, robbie-e.com, and then, of course, impactwrestling.com for all kinds of info there.
Fantastic. Thank you so much, Robbie. Pleasure having you tonight.
All right. Thanks, man.
Bye-bye. All right, ladies and gentlemen, thank you so much for listening to the Robbie E interview. Thank you so much, Robbie, for being a part of the Pancakes and Power Slam show, episode 228 tonight. And just like I said, he asked why, he was the 228th pick. Hey, listen, what's his name from the Pats? I don't like the Pats, so that's the reason why. Tom Brady, yeah. He was like a fourth-round pick from Michigan, another team that I despise being an Ohioan. But, yeah, he's arguably the greatest quarterback of all time. So, kudos to Robbie E. Without further ado, we have a lot to talk about tonight, and we're continuing the guest host series. I've loved it, and I thank you so much. I choose the best, and this guy is one of the best. He is has one of the best websites going on today in the nation, Wrestling Inc. founder. Without further ado, I'd like to introduce the guest co-host for tonight, Raj Giri. How are you tonight, sir?
Hey, Chris. How are you doing?
I'm doing fantastic. How's the day going?
It's busy. These Mondays and Tuesdays could be killer now with SmackDown being live, but
yeah,
at least there's no pay-per-view this week.
Exactly, yeah, absolutely. You got a couple more weeks for that. So, all right, without further ado, let's get to the headlines. Here we go. All right, so let's start off with the takeaways from last week's Cruiserweight Classic. It was the last first round Cruiserweight Classic. What were your takeaways, Raj?
I thought obviously Johnny Gargano versus Tommaso Ciampa was the big match, and I thought that delivered. I thought it was one of the better shows that they've had.
Yeah, I agree. I definitely think it was one of the better shows. I think all of them were fantastic, have been fantastic. But there's something about this show that just the quality of work was really awesome. I follow Wittron, you know, even in the indies, and of course his appearances on NXT, but there's a gimmick that's coming with him now. And, can you handle this? That's a t-shirt waiting to happen. And I was definitely, I thought he really stole the night. I mean, the Gargano Ciampa match was fantastic, but from a character standpoint, Swan, he stole the night. The fans were so into him.
And, he's a little seasoned too. He's got some experience in NXT. He's been there for a little bit. So he's got a little bit of a heads up that he doesn't need to fight to impress as much. He can be a little more loose, I think. Whereas the other guys, some of the other guys at least, are definitely trying to, they're a little nervous and trying to make an impact so they could get a contract. But I think Rich Swann's a star, think he could be a star of this Cruiserweight division.
Absolutely. Next, we have Ryback officially announcing his departure from WWE. And of course, WWE writing a statement confirming. I mean, this was basically indelible. This is waiting to happen. I'm just wondering why they just never managed to renegotiate anything. They just kind of fell out and just kind of they both kind of were at the point where this was just inevitable. We're not even trying to negotiate anything. I wonder why it was such a standstill and nothing came about. Now he's doing some indie work and he's known as the big guy. So it's very interesting to see him go.
Yeah. I mean, the guy, he had a ton of potential. He worked hard. He had a superstar look. He was just booked badly. He was obviously not always great in the ring either. And, he obviously hurt a lot of people during his time. But at the same time, he was always trying. And I remember asking him on a conference call when SmackDown was moving to the USA Network, just about his status in the company. And he was talking about, he wanted to pitch some ideas to Vince McMahon for WrestleMania. And he was all excited. And, he ends up on the pre-show. So, mm-hmm. I think it was just one of those cases where they're far apart on money was one thing, and you saw Ryback's blog where he pretty much said that everyone should make the same, which it's ridiculous, but he made a lot of good points in that blog, mm-hmm. in the sense that you could be the hardest worker, someone like Damien Sandow, you can do everything right and get yourself over, but if creative messes with you, that hurts your pocketbook, that hurts your career. And I felt like that's what happened with Ryback. As he got better, the creative just wasn't there. And just whenever he was kind of like Dolph Ziggler, where whenever he'd start to get ahead of steam, they'd kind of, chop his feet out from under him. So You know, Ziggler now is getting a break. We'll see how long it lasts, but yeah. So it's too bad, but you know, I think he's the kind of guy they'd love in New Japan.
Oh yeah, absolutely. I think New Japan will work for him. ROH not so much. I don't think because ROH isn't it's a character heavy promotion, but you kind of have to have athleticism with your character. That's pretty much what I think about when I think of ROH. TNA, I mean, you know, that's it really coming to TNA, to me at least, it's not really a big shocker anymore as much as it used to be. I'm a big fan of Moose. I've had him on my show. And, you know, just him being there to me and his debut, I mean, he kept the same music, but it really didn't wow me at all.
Yeah, I mean, TNA is just in that spot right now where they need something, whether it's a change of ownership or just some sort of spark to get that funk of a dying promotion off of them. You know, regardless, I mean, whether, you know, you want to believe them or not, it feels like it's a promotion in trouble. And that, yeah, you know, it's hanging on by a thread. And it's hard to get, you know, it's hard to get the talent, you know, motivated to go there when that's the impression that you have. So,
yeah.
I mean, they're in a lot of trouble. Really, really the only viable place to go right now is New Japan.
Yeah, I agree. If there's one person that you would, from anywhere, from New Japan, from WWE, from ROH, if there's one person that you think would be able to save the company, who would it be right now?
TNA?
Yeah, save TNA.
Oh, man. John Cena?
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, with even that, you know, just their business model, where they're at, they just don't have a steady revenue stream. I mean, you look at their website, it's like it has an $8 budget per month. It just doesn't feel like a professional company, and that's just, I just don't see how that's going to change. And they don't have the money to get someone a talent to shake things up. So it's just a I think it would require an ownership change, someone with deep pockets that's willing to really turn things around. But you know, pro wrestling, it's so dominated now by WWE. I mean, it's beyond anything we've seen. You know, WCW, NWA, they were always, you know, doing millions of viewers a week, even when WWF was, you know, growing crazy in the late 80s. You don't see that now.
Yeah. And, you know, I think organizations like New Japan and ROH, I think that they're good because ROH is more of a pocket company. You know, they know their niche and they're not, you know, they're not really vying to reach out, you know, millions and millions of people. I mean, of course, that would be their desire, though, you know, to help their ratings, but they know who to cater to. And they, you know, the infectious crowd, you know, the smaller crowds, the smaller venues. I mean, they do very, very well. I've been to many ROH shows and they do very, very well. They pack the place up every time. New Japan, I mean, they're a different country. They're solidifying their brand in Japan to be kind of like a mirror of the WWE. You know, they've been around for quite some time now. TNA is still kind of like that limbo. I don't see much of an identity with TNA. I mean, everybody has their niches. Even the independents have their niches, but TNA, I mean, unfortunately, I don't see anything. Next, we have Shelton Benjamin suffering from a torn rotator cuff. Of course, we saw on SmackDown a couple weeks ago some vignettes of him coming back, but of course, that's going to be on hold because he's going to have surgery. Now, my question to you, Raj, is that, is this going to basically, is this hold for Shelton Benjamin going to change some minds as far as his return?
Yeah, I mean, his return is definitely not it's not a definite now at all.
Yeah.
You know, it's something they've been trying to get a bunch of older talent just to kind of fill the rosters up. It's not like they're really looking to do anything with them. And yeah, I mean, you see it with Jinder Mahal. You know, he returned last week and he's already gotten beaten on Superstars and Main Event this week.
Yeah.
So it's just, it's not like they had real plans for these guys or, a big return in place. You know, at least, I mean, Shelton, he was getting a video package and everything, and he's a talented guy that they could do a lot with. Mm-hmm. But, you know, you never know how he'll heal. He's in his 40s now. It's too bad because I was hoping to see him get one last run because his run in New Japan wasn't that impressive.
Yeah, it wasn't that impressive. But when he was in Noah, when he was a part of Suzuki Gun, it wasn't too bad. But yeah, New Japan wasn't very good when he was with MVP. I forgot their names. I forgot their tag name. But you know, it's one of those things with Shelton Benjamin, like you said, like you were alluding to. You know, he would have another run. You know, I don't see anything exciting coming out of Benjamin in the WWE. Of course, some great mid-card matches, but, you know, he wasn't going to be anyone premier, you know, name in the WWE. But he definitely was going to put together some good matches, possibly put over some good people. I don't know if you've heard anything, but what's the status of WWE and RVD? Because I really want to see RVD put over Baron Corbin.
I haven't heard anything. I'm sure they've contacted him. I just don't think he wants to do the schedule. They've contacted a lot of guys, and it's been it's pretty amazing how many people have been turning them down. Mm-hmm. You know, just I think when you're in your 40s or, you know, and you've been living your life, you have jobs or whatever. And to go back on the road, you know, 4 days a week or, you know, sometimes 5 days a week and be away from your family. And you know, it's a big change, especially if it's not going to be a main event push and it's just kind of, you know, for not that much money. So, I mean, you saw how RVD was used his last couple times. It's not like they did anything special with him. I always felt he was badly booked. I felt like when you got a big star returning, you don't just immediately start having him get beaten by, you know, everybody. You know, you should have them win a feud or two when they first come back and then eventually lose, you know, get ahead of steam and then lose to somebody and put that guy over and, you know, get dominated by somebody and really put that new star over and then go out.
I totally agree with that. You know, I say this all the time on my show and just everywhere when it comes to wrestling. You know, in order to put someone over, you have to have enough steam or enough heat. And, you know, you can't – that's why I can't stand this 50-50 booking. And we'll talk about that with Raw and SmackDown. But I just can't stand 50-50 booking situations of anyone. If you really want someone to be utilized to put someone over – and this person keeps losing and lost, you know, three of the last six matches. How is this person effectively putting someone over if there's not enough steam, you know, behind that one person to make them relevant? I mean, look at you see the same thing with Baron Corbin now. I mean, you know, before Ziggler and Corbin feuded for 3 months, you know, Ziggler was winning here, losing twice, winning there, losing twice, winning twice, losing three times, losing once. And there wasn't enough steam to really put Baron Corbin over, as you've seen. I mean, with the lengthy feud, Baron Corbin is still relatively unknown and underutilized and not a big name, and now they're throwing Kalisto at him.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. I mean, that just shows the lack of planning, and it's like they're forgetting how to build stars. You know, with Roman Reigns, instead of giving him, you know, like what they're doing now, kind of putting him in the U.S. title level and then putting him in the world title level, you know, just throwing him right into the world title level, you know, fans don't react to that. Even, you know, back in the 80s and 90s, you know, had Macho Man first winning Intercontinental title, then going on to the world title, Ultimate Warrior. I mean, that was how you built guys. You don't just randomly winning battle royals, then jobbing to Dolph Ziggler, then winning and then doing nothing. It's just not how you build stars. And
yeah.
I think they just lose touch with that.
Yeah, I wrote an article in Bleacher Report 2 years ago, interestingly enough, about how Roman Reigns, how about how Rusev should be utilized for Roman Reigns' ascension. It's interesting that it's materializing now. But one of the things that I talked about the most was just the essence and the benefit of the mid-card journey. I mean, if we see, you know, if we see the best of all time, most of them had a mid-card title. If you think of Ric Flair, he was U.S. champ. You know, he feuding with Ricky Steamboat and Roddy Piper before he became world champ. If you think of Savage, you know, he was Intercontinental champion. If you think of Rock, he was Intercontinental champ. Austin was Intercontinental champ. Triple H was Intercontinental champ. So, I mean, other than with the exception of maybe Hogan and Taker, just about every single person who you can consider the top echelon, even Dusty Rhodes was U.S. champ. Everybody, just about everybody who you consider from whatever NWA, WCW, WWE, just about every single person who's considered the top echelon of wrestlers of all time started with a mid-card title before they got that big moment as world champ.
Yeah, and it just tells you, you know, it tells management too a lot about the talent, you know, how they'll handle it, you know, how they're doing as champ. And yeah, I mean, I think that's just a no-brainer way to build guys up. And I think already with Roman, you're seeing it working to an extent. Mm-hmm. He's getting cheers, you know, back. He's still getting booed, but not as bad as he was, you know, a month ago. And I could see, you know, it's hard for Roman right now to change the public opinion because now it's kind of in people's heads that they're supposed to not like this guy.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where I think a heel turn would benefit him. I don't blame Roman. I think it's WWE's booking to blame, but because I think he's been doing great, you know, in the ring, and he's got the presence and everything. But anyway, I digress.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, you're making some good points there. Then we got The Rock endorsing Ricochet. I'm going to quote what he said as part of his lengthy message from Instagram. He said, "I'm honored to be your inspiration as you go down that long, hard road for success. Remember these important things. Always stay above the garbage of backstage politics and always give the audience what they want. Whether you're a heel or babyface, going over or doing a job, doesn't matter. Always give them what they want. And most important, have fun. Wish you all the success in the world, brother, and hope you become a big star in our business." I mean, wow. I mean, Ricochet has been one of the most popular people of the year from his, you know, match with Will Ospreay and just, you know, his junior tag runs with Matt Sydal and just the success that he's doing in Japan. And I actually interviewed him on my show last year, and he was talking about how, you know, he was privileged to be such a big fan of The Rock. So this hits me personally as far as conversing with him and just understanding and feeling the zeal that he had when we were discussing that, and to have The Rock actually endorse him with a lengthy message like that's a big deal. That's a huge thing to really rub. You know, that's a huge rub, and that's a really big sign for Ricochet.
And it's just such a cool thing for The Rock to do, you know, with mm-hmm. all the stuff he's got going on, and, you know, for him to take the time out and post that, you know, I mean, you know, most of his social media posts are promoting his movies or these gigantic projects that
right.
he's on. And, yep. and he's being followed by millions of people that aren't, you know, so many that aren't wrestling fans, and to be putting something out there, you know, praising an up and coming talent that a lot of the people that are following him don't know who that is. It's, you know, such a cool thing for him to do. And mm-hmm. yeah, just a class act.
Yeah, I totally agree. And like you said, I mean, in spite of all the other endeavors that he has, you know, he spent time to do that. Actually, Ricochet and I actually chatted back and forth today. We're texting to get back on my show again. And I really want to talk to him about that as far as just how he feels. And I'm sure that, you know, he felt quite pleased for that endorsement. And next we have Conor McGregor. He rips the WWE. He posted a tweet with a lot of expletives in it, and then he follows the tweet by saying, "No disrespect, no, but he slapped the head off your entire roster," talking about the WWE. Now, you know, there's reports, and, you know, I'm sure you've reported much stuff, and there's other reports talking about the Wrestling Observer talking about how it's not a work, and it's actually the opposite. It may blow a deal that the WWE and UFC, you know, could be talking right now. But what's the point of it? I mean, what's the point of Conor? I mean, you know, I know that you follow MMA very well, and I follow MMA to a intermediate to expert level is where I'm at. And Conor McGregor, he's had this gimmick for a while. You know, he's known for his mouth, and he's known for his cockiness and bravado. But you know, is this one instance that it probably wasn't a good idea to do?
Look, I think my personal opinion is that the hype hasn't been as strong for his upcoming fight with Nate Diaz, and he just wanted to get attention. And I think, you know, he made those comments during a conference call. He saw how much traction that was getting, so he decided to double down and post that tweet. I don't think he means it. I think he's name dropped Stone Cold in interviews before. He's clearly patterned himself after Ric Flair. So, yeah, I think he's just trolling to get attention, but it just seems kind of desperate. You're just trolling. You're just being like a troll in the comments section where you're just trying to get a reaction as opposed to, you know, generating a legit interest, like talking about your opponent and talking about the fight and generating and finding a way to generate interest that way, as opposed to, you know, if I were to go out and, you know, just say, if I went on Twitter and just ripped on Kevin Owens, for instance, because he's got such a rabid fan following, I'd get a ton of reactions, but it's just trolling. It's not doing anything meaningful. And right. I think that's what he was doing. He's getting the wrong kind of attention.
Yeah. Now, I mean, there's been talks throughout the year, you know, that, Ronda Rousey's always been, you know, target for WWE as far as acquiring her. But McGregor has been up there too, as far as someone that the WWE could be interested in. Do you think that this may kind of change the mind of WWE as far as wanting to grab him?
No. I think if there's money to be made, you know, they'll do it. I just don't, you know, you never know, I guess. He's just such a smaller guy. I just don't know if, you know, with Ronda Rousey, you know, she could stand there with any of the women in the company and she's the same size or bigger. So I don't know. I just don't know if that McConnor is the right dynamic. It'd be big box office if they could find the right angle, even if he did like a special referee thing. But I don't think it hurt anything if they wanted to do it. I don't think, you know, if anything, I think it just makes Vince and Triple H a little more aware of Connor.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's true. And, you know, he may be a one-off thing for like Mania, similar to Floyd Mayweather and the Big Show. I can certainly see something like that. As far as just a wrestling career, I certainly don't see anything like that. But for some reason, Conor McGregor versus Finn Balor, it just sparks interest to me for some reason. I don't know why.
I just can't see the UFC allowing him to work a match just with how big of a draw he is to them. You know, him being on a pay-per-view can make a $800,000 buy difference. You know, his last fight with Nate Diaz did, it's like 1.5, 1.6 million buys, which is just insane.
Yeah.
So he's just way too valuable that I could think of to put him in. You know, with Lesnar doing UFC, it's a little different. He's very part-time. But WWE still took a risk. Obviously, they got compensated very well. But Conor on a pay-per-view, you know, you're talking $10 million, you know, at least.
Yeah.
At least. Yeah. I mean, that's a very low number. I'm actually probably way under. I don't see it happening anytime soon.
Yeah. Joey Styles released from the WWE. There hasn't been a definitive reason reported yet, but there's some talks as far as just a Q&A that he had recently, basically saying that he's going to get fired after it. Saying things as far as the not liking the Universal Championship and not liking the three-man, you know, commentating team and
just as far as why Vince likes Roman Reigns, just kind of, you know, just kind of a curtain call and kind of breaking that fourth wall as far as some insider things that's probably the WWE didn't want him to share. It seems like, for me, it seems like it was one of those things that I'm just going to, you know, spill my guts out because I know that they probably want to renew my contract. I mean, he got promoted to something like SVP of digital media or marketing or something like that. But at the same time, it may have been, you know, we really don't have too much for you anymore. We're not going to renew your contract. And so I'm just going to go ahead and divulge whatever I can.
I see. I don't think so. I still thought his pretty much his answers that he gave were pretty safe. I didn't see anything in there. You know, I recapped it that day on WrestlingInc.com and, mm-hmm. you know, posted everything he said. Oh, this is going to get me fired. You know, Roman Reigns brings the moms to the crowd. Well, I don't think that's that bad. And, you know, with the Universal title, he's like, well, you know, the fans on social media don't like it, but ultimately the name of the belt doesn't matter. You know, again, that's not mm-hmm. all that controversial. He kept putting over Vince McMahon and, you know, putting over PG it was something when you listen to, you wouldn't think that someone would get fired over that. So, it comes across as petty, if that's what the reason is. I think maybe there's more to it. I don't think that Joey Styles would do, a Facebook Q&A to try to get fired, you know, when he's been there with the company for so long. I think he'd just quit. He'd just leave. I think it was Dave Meltzer that was saying that he's always kind of been, you know, kind of on the, you know, walking a fine line anyway. So, you know, maybe it would just annoy them enough that this was it.
Yeah. Isn't that the reason? Isn't that one of the reasons why he got pushed over to the website? Because he was very vocal as far as his announcing. I think he announced from 05 to 08. And wasn't he vocal about that and his and Adam Lee? And I think, I mean, I heard this years and years ago. That was one of the reasons that he got pushed over to the website, if I'm not mistaken.
I think they just didn't like his commentary. And, you know, he had heat. They would play little pranks on him. But I remember thinking that they just, you know, that they weren't fans of his commentary. Because I think he took the spot that they were trying to bring Mike Goldberg in for, if I'm not mistaken. But, I think ultimately it was just, you know, he has a, you know, it's funny what an uproar it caused when really no one's really seen him on TV for the longest time. You know what I mean? Like,
right.
Fans are going crazy and he hasn't even been on TV. He's been working like an office job. So it's, it's interesting.
Does he go back to announcing somewhere?
Where? You know, that I guess that's the thing. There's not really that many places to go. ROH, they've got their announcers. Lucha Underground, you know, their season's not, you know, their next season is coming up. But, I guess you could do that. But, I don't see how much they would offer him. New Japan is, you know, they got JR and Josh Barnett for the Access show. I just, you know, again, TNA, I think Joey Styles is smart enough to know that that's a big risk and
right.
might not be worth it. So I just don't see him. I don't see it, but anything could happen. This is just my guess. I haven't spoken with him or anything.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, every now and then I catch the championship, championship wrestling from Florida or something like that. Yeah, CWHF or CWFH, Championship Wrestling from Hollywood. Yeah, that's where Eli Drake came from. Every now and then I catch that on my TV. And then I interviewed Jesse Sorensen, and he was promoting pretty heavy Paragon Pro Wrestling. And I do see that on an app that there's like a fight app or something like that you can get that for free. I mean, you know, you never know. I mean, it seemed like it's a pretty good upstart promotion, Paragon, and maybe that'd be maybe a good fit for him. It just seems as if he may want to announce. I think he's what, like 45 now or something like that, so he's still got some years in him.
Yeah, I just don't see any place that would have a good full time gig. But it, you know, yeah. I can totally see him if he wants to do it for fun, for sure.
Mm-hmm. And let's talk about the final headline is the thoughts of Dean Ambrose on the Stone Cold podcast. I'll give you the honors to go first.
You know what? It seemed like their styles don't mesh. I felt like Ambrose didn't seem intimidated or starstruck or, you know, by mm-hmm. Austin at all. Like, you know, I think a lot of the younger guys, when they're on there, they show this extra level of respect to Austin because of who he is. Whereas, you know, Ambrose is just kind of, you know, his normal self, just kind of laid back. And then Austin, it was just odd that Austin kept pushing the family stuff and, you know, his upbringing when it was clear that Ambrose didn't really want to talk about it.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, Ambrose would kind of snap back at him, like, what are you reading the internet? And just kind of being a smartass, which I know, like, that probably got under Austin's skin. So there was, like, this tension kind of there, like, kind of, you know, the whole interview, you could kind of feel it. And, you know, there's that one point where Austin was like, come on, let's put butts in the seat or something like that. Mm-hmm. Like, wake up. And
yeah.
I thought, you know, the thing he said to Ambrose at the end, I thought that was kind of below the belt as far as challenging him to you know, not rest on his laurels. I mean, this guy, after he won the title, he was doing, you know, two shows per night and mm-hmm. flying to Hawaii and, you know, doing all these tours. And it's just a very different place that Austin remembers. You know, mm-hmm. Austin was there when, and he could do whatever he wanted. You know, now these guys are handcuffed. And when you do try to, you know, do something outside the box, you see it all the time where guys will try to put something on YouTube or something, they get it pulled, and you know, they get heat for it and they get jobbed and put on Superstar. So it's just a very different place, and I just thought that criticism seemed unfair. And Ambrose himself said, you know, he started off by saying he was offended by that and then kind of walked away from it and, you know, mm-hmm. thought better of it and let it lie. But It was an interesting podcast.
Yeah, I don't know, man. I got a different take on it. Maybe because I'm a psychology PhD student right now, and I just, you know, analyze things from that vantage point. It just seems like Austin was. I mean, I respect Austin. I respect his passion because when he was trying to poke him and push him and prod him, I think that was good for Ambrose because, you know, it's one of those things for me, you know, Ambrose's ring work speaks for itself. I mean, when it was John Moxley, you know, when he was with CZW and all the indie promotions, Heartland Wrestling Association, you know, when he was there, I've watched many tapes of Moxley, and it seems like there was more of a flair from him when he was Moxley. It kind of does seem like he's gotten a bit stagnant to me. I mean, you know, and I understand, you know, he talked about the scripted promos, and I agree with that. I interviewed Brad Maddox a few weeks back, and he was talking about how just about 100% of everything is scripted as far as promos are concerned. And basically Ambrose was alluding to the same thing. He said now he's at a position where, you know, he has a little bit of say, and you know, like you were saying, There is some reins there. There is some, you know, there is some room that's not, there's not a lot of give there. And I do understand how that could be frustrating, but I understand Austin from an old school perspective because, you know, I'm such an old school minded wrestling fan. And it's just, I can understand how Austin was just kind of getting a little irritated. Because when he was trying to, I mean, the family thing, you know, this isn't a counseling session. So if he didn't want to talk about his family, you know, he that wasn't necessary to keep going with that. But I think from what I saw and just the fire and just the questions that Austin was asking, he kind of saw beyond. It seemed like to me, he kind of saw beyond the, yeah, I want to bring the chill vibes here and, you know, cut the crap. I mean, that's basically what it seemed like he was approaching things for me. And that's what I saw. I mean, I saw that, come on, Dean. I mean, you're the world champion. You're the face of the company right now. And you're basically just, this interview just seems so, you seem so uninterested. You seem so disconnected. You don't seem as if you even care. And, you know, that's what I can respect. Like, for instance, you know, Big Show, I think Big Show was a fantastic interview because he wasn't starstruck by Austin. It was just a matter of him appreciating the business to show it expressively. You know, and Edge and Christian was just funny as crap. And Paige was a throwaway interview for me. But, you know, it just seems like when Dean Ambrose, I was just really cringing throughout the entire interview because I was waiting for Dean Ambrose to really just kind of to get out of just not seem like he don't care. There was a couple sparks, you know, when he was talking about the promos and cut the promo and when he was talking about Harley Race and Ric Flair. You know, those are a few things that you saw kind of sparked him a little bit. But I just don't think it's a good presentation. I mean, you have to think about it. And you know this, you know, everything's a brand for WWE when it comes to ambassador work, when it comes to work outside of the WWE, when it comes to the network shows, when it comes to the interviews, everything at the end of the day helps. It's supposed to help the WWE brand. And by having the top guy of your company just seeming like he just don't care about this, it just didn't seem like it was a very good presentation to me.
I just think that's his personality. I just think that's his persona. You know, you don't have Bray Wyatt on there and all of a sudden he's this happy go lucky dude. You know, that's just how, you know, I think it'd be weird if all of a sudden he's just a very happy go lucky guy. I just think it was just the wrong fit. I don't know if you listened to Ambrose on Chris Jericho's podcast. But
vaguely,
I thought that
not
was
all
great.
I thought
that one was great. So, you know, again, and it's not like his delivery was any different. But I think, you know, a lot of it was Ambrose was talking about stuff he was interested in. You know, he's talking about how to make a good match. He was talking about how he loved the John Cena Brock Lesnar match from SummerSlam. And it was just stuff that really interested him. And I think when he spent 20 minutes, you know, on stuff he didn't want to talk about, and I think he was just trying to get out of it. I just think it just wasn't the right fit.
What do you think about him semi-shooting on Lesnar's laziness?
I thought that was interesting. That took some guts because, you know, Lesnar's obviously a very high on the totem pole. You know, the thing with Lesnar is, you know, I'm not sure when he was approached with the UFC 200 deal, but I'm sure like the initial questions and stuff had to have been around that time. Mm-hmm. So if he thought he's going to possibly be fighting again for a possible, you know, $6 to $10 million payday, you can see why he doesn't want to do anything crazy. Lesnar's not really a hardcore kind of wrestler guy. You know, he'll have good matches and he's had a ton of good matches. And, you know, that was another case I thought of their styles and stuff not gelling. And yeah, the WrestleMania match sucked. It was weird watching it. It was like, what did this accomplish? And it was great. I love that Ambrose was open about it, that Lesnar really didn't want to do anything.
Yeah, I agree. I think I've been thinking that for a while, and I'm glad that he said it. That was the highlight of the interview for me because I've been agreeing with that for a while. I mean, since he came back, I think it was 2012 that he came back, right after WrestleMania, if I'm not mistaken. It was right after, Rock Austin 2. And it just seemed – I can't – other than Punk. Punk at SummerSlam was at 13 or 14 that they went against each other, 2013 or 14 SummerSlam. That was a good match, and Triple H was okay. Taker was a bit lousy. And then just Dean Ambrose wasn't very good. Roman Reigns was good just because it was a story. It was kind of like a David and Goliath type of thing. That was actually, that match actually surprised me. It was pretty good. But I can't really think of many, you know, marquee Brock Lesnar matches since he's returned. So I agree with Ambrose. I think he looks lazy. I mean, you know, yeah, he's, you know, a dozen years older than, you know, matches that he had against Angle that were excellent. But at the same time, you know, just because you're older doesn't mean that, you know, you have to become lazy. I mean, you know, Jericho's, you know, he'll be 46 years old this year. So, I mean, he's, you know, he's still got it. He's lost a few steps, but he can still put it together in the ring. I mean, you have people who are the same age as Brock Lesnar, you know, AJ Styles, you know, is the same age as Brock Lesnar. John Cena is the same age as Brock Lesnar. So, you know, all of them can still go. So I don't think age matters really. I just think that his zeal for the product and for the business has faded a lot.
You know, again, I think it's too. It was one match. You know, if this is a, you know, an ongoing thing, then that's one thing. But his matches with Undertaker last year were great. So, you know, I think we'll just have to kind of wait and see if, you know, we'll see how the match with Randy Orton goes. But, you know, maybe it was just a one-time thing because he had the UFC fight coming up.
Yeah, hopefully so. I agree with Ambrose and yeah, like you said, hopefully we'll see something different with Randy Orton. All right, real quick, Raw and SmackDown takeaway. I was in Anaheim, California, just trying to develop more of the, you know, feuds leading into SummerSlam. What were your takeaways from Raw, Raj?
I thought it sucked, to be honest with you. I thought it felt like, I said this on the Wrestling podcast last night, it felt like a holiday episode. Like, they just kind of gave in. They're just like, we'll just keep everything on cruise control. And, it was just like they didn't even try. It was hard to watch. I think that the 3 hours just made it seem extra long. I think if it's 2 hours, it probably wouldn't have been that bad, but that extra hour just makes it seem so much longer.
Yeah, I agree with you wholeheartedly, man. I have a Raw review as well, and I was saying on Facebook Live, and I was just saying how much just every week it just seems like Raw just stretches. I mean, it's a painful stretch. And we see that so much, especially the past couple of weeks where you have a third of your roster away, you know, on SmackDown. It's became even more stretched. That's why you have so many segments, talking segments. I think it was like four last week. Yesterday on Raw was like three. You had the end zone cast deal with Jericho and Owens. There were funny parts, but that was too long. You had the Rusev and Lana thing. That was too long. And then you had the ending with Foley and Bryan. That was too long. I mean, you just have all of these talking segments that's not really – I mean – it's one of those things that you can take it or leave it. It's not really building much. going on. I mean, Rusev and Lana did a little bit with Reigns, and I actually like the Roman Reigns and Rusev feud. I think it's good. I think it's a good way to get him some steam and some face pops, because, you know, Rusev is one of the only pure heels in the WWE. I say this all the time. I appreciate Rusev's work tremendously because, you know, him, Baron Corbin, Miz, those are only a few pure heels that exist in the WWE anymore. So I like that. Cesaro, Sheamus, I mean, it's just, again, it's just, what is that doing to anyone? The only thing that I can think would make some sense would be if they did some type of gimmick match at SummerSlam, maybe some type of tour out of three falls or something like that. And then Darren Young and Titus O'Neil. Darren Young seemed more of the heel last week. Titus did this week. 50-50 booking. It was painful to watch, and I agree with you wholeheartedly. I didn't see much of anything come. And then Neville and Sin Cara defeating the Dudley boys, and it seemed as if the Dudleys may split. I mean, did they not watch 2002 at all?
And not just that, but you hype a mystery partner, and it's Sin Cara.
Sin Cara.
Just announce it. Just say Neville and Sin Cara against the Dudleys. Why make it a mystery partner when all you're doing is setting up everybody for a letdown?
Yeah.
I just thought it was bad from top to bottom. You know, I thought Rusev was great. I think he's always great. He's really good on his feet. He's I think he's really witty. And you know, if they can get him, if they got him to drop the anti-American thing, I think he could be a big baby face. I thought Roman looked looser on the mic than he's ever looked. And I thought that I liked that segment. And I thought the Cesaro and Sheamus match as a match was really good, but there was no reason to care. There was like nothing on the line. You already saw a clean finish to it last week. I assumed that Sheamus was going to go over just because that's how they do things. So I was happy that that didn't happen. But yeah, it was just bad. And the ratings, I think, you know, they've been against the Olympics before. So it's not like this is the first time, and they just got crushed. You know, their numbers, they did under 3 million viewers for Monday's show.
Yeah. And it just seems as if, it seems as if WWE is kind of bucking to that, to those competitors, so to speak, when you have, football, when you have the Olympics. And I was actually at the 4th of July Raw, and that Raw was painful. It was just awful. And it just seems like the WWE is kind of like, we have a certain amount of viewers that or probably watches regardless, but we don't really have a desire to cater to anyone new this week. I think that's not a good way to approach new viewers.
No, because football is going to hurt them more than the Olympics. So
right, exactly,
or have the same effect. So if you're tapping out now, what are you going to do in the fall? I mean, we're a month away.
Yep. So what about SmackDown?
SmackDown I thought was a lot better than Raw. Just I think, again, it being 2 hours made it just didn't seem as long. I mean, they were missing a lot of star power with, you know, all the with Cena and AJ Styles and you know, the Usos and Apollo Crews all being on the tour in New Zealand and Australia. But being 2 hours, you can stretch certain segments out. And so I thought it flowed better. I thought it was easier to watch. And you know, again, I was never really bored during this episode. The one thing, Randy Orton, that match, I just couldn't get into. But other than that, you know, I thought it was better than Raw, but it wasn't a great show or anything. I thought SmackDown last week was a lot better, but you know, I'd give it, you know, probably 2.5 to 3. 2.75 stars out of 5.
Mm, man, you are a gentleman. I'd probably give it about I'd say 1.75 to 2, because it just seems like the B show to me. I mean, like you said, I mean, you know, granted, you know, in all fairness, There were a chunk of quality talent out that is needed for a SummerSlam before you know the second SummerSlam, the second SmackDown before the second biggest pay-per-view of the year. But it just seemed like it was depleted. It just seemed like it was star depleted this week. And, you know, I did like
this. Did you like it better than Raw?
Yes, because Raw was painful. I did like it better than Raw. I would say that. I like the tag team thing. I do like that they're setting something up. It seemed like we may have some type of, you know, four corners match or something like that at SummerSlam, which, you know, matches like that are okay. I think they're important, you know, filler matches for SummerSlam, especially since I'm a big fan of filler matches if it means something. I'm a huge fan of storylines, but if you want to throw a filler match because you can't develop or create, you know, in time, if you want to throw any match out there, some type of four corners tag team match will be okay to me. But, you know, what's going on with Becky Lynch? I mean, she doesn't deserve what she's getting. I mean, just some type of, you know, the 50-50 booking with Natalya and, you know, just being, you know, the object of Alexa Bliss's and Eva Marie's, you know, push. You know, and Eva Marie deserves one of these.
Dummy. Yeah. Yeah.
I don't like Eva Marie's deal at all. I can't do it. Her gimmick just seems as if it's just pushed. I think that she came out of NXT too soon. I think that would have been gold in NXT, but on SmackDown, I just don't see it.
I like it better than her wrestling. You know, is what
right.
They're doing. I just don't think, look, not everyone has to be a wrestler. If you see a star there, you know, make her a valet or, you know, find another role.
Yeah.
You know, Elizabeth never stepped in the ring and she, you know, she was a very effective character. Paul
like
Heyman.
Vicky Guerrero.
Yeah, exactly. So why force her to be something that she's not? And, you know, she is a star. I mean, she's, you know, she's stunning. But she's just not a wrestler. So I don't see why they are gung ho with going with it. You know, Becky Lynch, I think it's just a case of them not having enough women. They need to put her in a feud with someone that she can win. Cause she should, if it were up to me, unless you're bringing up Bayley to SmackDown, she should be their top female star.
Mm-hmm.
And again, we're only a few weeks in, but you know, they need to establish Alexa Bliss. I don't think they should have had her get beaten. Yeah, I mean, this was the first match since the draft, first women's match, because you know the ones happened last week. So I definitely don't think you should beat Alexa Bliss, but you know, I wouldn't have beat Becky either.
I agree. Yep. I don't.
Who
agree.
Else you got? They're a little thin on the women's side on SmackDown.
Yeah, you had that segment a few weeks back where everybody came out. Naomi, where in the world has she been? I mean, she came out for the interview and just haven't really been relevant since. And then Carmella, I like Carmella a lot, but I think that they, again, you know, there was no buildup with Carmella. They just kind of threw her out there, kind of like Apollo Crews, and just the fans reacted to their lack of buildup. I mean, there's when Carmella comes out in NXT, they're so into it because they understand that she's, you know, she's a part of the Enzo and Cass gang, but to put her out by herself, I think that was a horrible move. And I think that it's being reflected because the crowd is not into Carmella, and it's sad because I really like Carmella. She has a ton of potential, but you're already throwing her in a very, very bad spot. You know, having the same type of promo, walking promos as she did in NXT, but she doesn't have a following for people to be engaged like NXT.
Well, I think the problem, and, you know, Vince Russo will talk about this a lot when he on our podcast, is they assume way too many, either that way too many people watch NXT,
mm-hmm.
Which if you were to assume that every U.S. network subscriber watches it, that's a million max, you know, and that's max. You know, Raw is doing, you know, around 3 million a week, sometimes more. So right there, you got 2/3 of your audience who don't know who these people are, at least. Mm-hmm. I think you're lucky if half the people with the network subscriptions watch NXT. So, you know, you should introduce these people better, and not a 1 week vignette, but like over several weeks, and build them up, and, you know, do vignettes where you're showing their characters so they don't have to come out and like explain who they are. And so I think, yeah, they're bringing in a lot of new people, but, you know, give some of them, especially if you think they could be a difference maker, you know, give them a character, give them vignettes and introduce them to the audience better. I feel like, man, you know, that might hurt Finn Balor. I feel like Finn Balor is getting a little hurt right now because
wow.
he was out there cold.
I could not agree with you more. I just, man, I've even mentioned that many times on my show. I mean, I even kind of broke down the numbers. I think I did that last week or the week before. Just, you know, you got 3 to 3.5, and that's being generous, you know, on you know, watchers of Raw, and you have a million to, I think it's around 1.4 million now or something like that as far as the subs for the network. And so you have about 2 million, you have a 2 million less people. You know, so basically there's 2 million people when you put someone automatically on from NXT on Raw with no build, the majority of people don't know who they are. You have 1.5 million who do and 2 million you don't. And
well,
so,
that 1.5 million, you're counting national subs. So just
exactly.
U.S., it's probably even less than that.
Exactly, exactly. And so even with that, like you said, and I've even said this before, even with that, there's a fraction of those people who don't watch NXT. So you can even say 750,000 people watch NXT. And that's still, you know, like you said, 2/3 less, you know, so you're already coming out introducing someone from the gate at a disadvantage. And I've said this about Finn Balor. I am a huge fan of Finn Balor. I think he's great. I think that they're not developing his character enough. Why in the world would I be interested in someone who's the number one contender for the brand's world title if you're spending consecutive week telling me who he is? How was that a number one contender to me? I don't. They spent time with vignettes, you know, video packages last night, and then Rollins being in the ring with him last week as far as letting people know who he is. Why would he be a number one contender to me if you're still trying to develop him to convince me to say, okay, well, it takes 3 weeks. I don't know who this guy is, but it's 3 weeks later. Okay, I know who he is enough to be kind of interested. It just seems backwards to me.
Yeah, and the scary thing, it is already seems like they're losing faith. They didn't, you know, have him come out in front of the live audience at all. The way he was positioned in the promo with Seth Rollins last week, Seth Rollins got the better of him and just came off as the bigger star.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I think they would have been better served to just have him, you know, at least just wrestle. Cause, I don't know. I just think it seemed like a good idea at first. That first week, the crowd was hot because, you know, it was an NXT crowd. You know, certain markets will have more NXT fans than others. And yeah, so I think it'll be interesting to see how, you know, what they do, because they're going to have him come out, you know, with the demon gimmick. And if they beat him, you know, his first night bringing the demon gimmick, I think that really hurts him.
Yeah.
So they might just have to let him win.
That'll be rough. Five of the week coming up.
It is now time for the Flavor of the Week.
So let's do we're continuing the favorite match SummerSlam series. So I would like to have Raj's favorite matches, one per year from 2005 to 2010. So what's your favorite match of SummerSlam 2005?
Oh, gosh, that was Hogan and Shawn Michaels, right?
Yeah. I hope that's not your pick.
I'll say this. It depends. There's so many things when you say a favorite match, because, like, I loved Hulk Hogan versus Andre the Giant as a kid. It was just memorable. Oh, yeah. But the match itself, you know, sucked, you know, as far as an athletic wrestling match. I'd go with, Mysterio and Eddie was good. I'm going to go with Hulk and Shawn, because that one was memorable. It was interesting because Shawn was so annoyed with Hulk in real life and dealing with the politics. So it just really stands out in my mind. Whereas, you know, the other ones, I kind of have to really remember them. So,
yeah. The overselling from Shawn Michaels was very funny, especially since we know this part of it. So,
Yeah. But as far as and Edge versus Matt Hardy was a cool match too. But I'll go with Shawn and Hulk just for the comical and historical significance.
Yeah. Mysterio and Guerrero was for me. I think that was a fantastic match. 2006.
Let's see. I think I'd probably go with... I think you got to go with the main event again with Edge and Cena.
I chose DX versus the McMahons because I like the storyline that was built around that. It was pretty funny.
I was annoyed with that storyline by that point. I thought DX had just jumped the shark by that point.
I could certainly see that. What do you have for 07?
07, I'd probably go with, again, probably the main event with Cena and Orton. I thought that was, definitely better than Batista and Great Khali. I thought that 2007 was a very forgettable SummerSlam.
Yeah, I have Mysterio too. If I'm not mistaken, Triple H and Mysterio both made returns that night. I have Mysterio and Chavo because that's their actually second SummerSlam going against each other, second straight. Chavo got the win in 06, and then Mysterio returned. They did an injury angle and then beat Chavo in 07, so that was pretty good for me. All right, we've got like 90 seconds. What do you have for 08?
I'd go with Batista and Cena. I thought that was a cool match, clean ending, and I like that one.
Yeah, I've taken Edge, Hell in a Cell. I was a big fan of that match. 09. Okay,
Jeez, I'm not even remembering 09. Let me see here. CM Punk and Hardy, for sure.
Ladder match. What TLC, I would think it was, yeah. DX versus Legacy to me, because I think that was a pretty fun match. It was a long match, so I think it was like 20 minutes long. And then 2010.
I'm going to have to skip on that one. I didn't like any of the matches on that show. I thought Nexus versus Team WWE, the booking just was all wrong to where I could like that match.
Yeah, I agree.
Daniel Bryan's return I liked, but other than that, I just thought it was just too bad to stand out as my favorite match.
I agree. That match was not good. I went with Kane and Mysterio just because I just have a soft spot for Kane. For some reason, I think he's so underutilized, and that was a good reign for him. So I was a big fan of that. All right, Raj, so let us know where we can find you and all of your endeavors.
All right, at RajGary303 and at Wrestling Inc. And just I'm constantly on WrestlingInc.com, so make sure to check it out.
Awesome. Been a pleasure, Ross. Thanks for coming on the show tonight.
All right. Take care.
You too. All right, ladies and gentlemen, that was Ross Geary from WrestlingInc.com. So pleased for him to be a guest co-host on tonight. Thank you to Robbie E. For being a part of the show. I had a lot of fun with him. And of course, ladies and gentlemen, this is 228 episodes of the Pancakes and Power Slam show. And, of course, you can follow us at Crave Wrestling on Twitter and follow the Crave Wrestling Facebook page. It's Crave Wrestling. And again, next week we'll have another interview. We'll have another guest co-host, and we'll have some more fun as it is the go-home show before SummerSlam. Thank you so much for continuing to support the Pancakes and Power Slam show. Until next week, enjoy your week of wrestling. God bless. This is Chris Featherstone, Crave Wrestling, signing off. God bless. Goodbye.